Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You might say my next guest was the first ambassador to hell, the first ambassador at large for war crimes issues. He saw firsthand the effects of the atrocities which marked the 1990s, from the Balkans to Rwanda, Sierra Leone, Cambodia, Chechnya, Sudan, the Congo, Liberia, Ethiopia, Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. He worked under Madeleine Albright when she was U.N. ambassador and then Secretary of State, and he was the U.S. point person on war crimes tribunals during the formation of the International Criminal Court. David Sheffer joins me now. He's the author of his memoirs about that period entitled All the Missing Souls, A Personal History of the War Crimes Tribunals. Thank you so much for writing this book, and welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's a tremendous pleasure to be here.
And listeners, our phones are open if you want to talk to David Sheffer, 212-433-WNYC. The cover of your book is a picture of you walking through a graveyard of black crosses placed in rows. They look like anonymous graves. Where was that picture taken?
This is the Nyanza massacre site in Rwanda, just outside of Kigali. And this photo was actually taken in September of 1997. I had been to Rwanda several times before, but this was my first visit as ambassador at large for war crimes issues. And I always, of course, visit these sites when I'm on the job.
Did you include this photo as the cover photo for a reason? Does it have some kind of special significance?
Yes, I thought it was perhaps emblematic of the title itself, All the Missing Souls. That is a theme that continues to reverberate as you get into these issues, and it certainly did in my job in the 1990s. We had so many instances where we had days, weeks, or months where we actually did not know where tens of thousands of individuals might be. In the midst of atrocities, and even in their aftermath, for example, Srebrenica, for quite some time, we did not know where 8,000 men and boys had actually ended up. So all the missing souls in this picture of this cemetery is sort of, and it's a very makeshift cemetery of victims of the Rwandan genocide, it tries to bring that point out.
It's a heck of a nickname, Ambassador to Hell, as you were the first U.S. ambassador for war crimes, appointed in 1997. And the United States was the first country to create such a position. So this was a great honor and, I think, an advance for humanity. But you also call it a sad commentary on the state of the world that no such position existed until then, even after Nuremberg. How did you know what to do in that newly created position, and why didn't one exist?
Well, you know, throughout the Cold War, we had no international criminal tribunals. The whole legacy of the Nuremberg and Tokyo military tribunals after World War II had become historical footnotes. And that situation in the Cold War did freeze the political dynamics that are necessary to create these international criminal tribunals. With the end of the Cold War, that situation eased up. But we saw in the 1990s, and this is why I say it's a sad commentary, why at the end of the Cold War would we suddenly see the unleashing of massive atrocities in the Balkans, in Africa, and elsewhere? And that it was a sad commentary that we had to create an ambassadorship to address those atrocities. It would be a far better world if there was no need for such an ambassadorship.
And you write about the mistakes made in the 1990s, which kept the United States from acting in the face of ongoing war crimes. And you even describe your own mistakes. President Clinton has certainly spoken about one of his biggest regrets being not going into Rwanda when that genocide was taking place. Is there one thing that you would have done differently?
Yes, and I write about it in the book. There's a chapter about the Rwandan genocide. I was on the Deputies Committee of the National Security Council at that time, and was in the policy meetings and all of these meetings in Washington during that very turbulent period. And I write about, you know, what I could have done in certain meetings, particularly one in late April in the Deputies Committee, that, you know, in retrospect, you sort of wish you would have shouted and screamed and sort of taken the risk with your colleagues of looking like an overexcited individual. But those were moments that we should have been thinking unconventionally, out of the box, not look at this situation as one conventionally does so often in Washington.
How does that make you look at the situation in Syria today, or mm-hmm. how did it make you look at the intervention in Libya last year?
Well, I was very gratified by what happened in Libya last year. I thought it was actually lessons learned from the 1990s. Remember, Susan Rice is our ambassador to the United Nations. She lived through the Rwandan genocide as a member of the National Security Council, and I think that resonated in how she reacted to Libya, the fact that the Security Council moved very quickly to refer the Libyan situation to the International Criminal Court, and then a month later to create the NATO no-fly zone. Those are lessons learned, and as controversial as that whole situation may be on the agendas of some individuals, I think the Libya operation was where we should have been in 2011. As for Syria, I do think we need to keep the door open for unconventional thinking. I think the op-ed in today's New York Times by Mark Haines and his colleague to consider getting some drones up there to see where these atrocities on the streets of Syria are occurring in real time is a very useful idea. But we also need to be thinking about ultimately, we've already done the economic sanctions, the diplomatic sanctions. The next step, of course, is the Security Council, and if Russia can possibly be persuaded even to abstain, perhaps referring the Syrian situation to the International Criminal Court.
David Sheffer, my guest, who served as the first U.S. ambassador at large for war crimes issues under President Clinton. He is now a law professor and director of the Center for International Human Rights at Northwestern University's School of Law. And his memoirs, his new book entitled All the Missing Souls, A Personal History of the War Crimes Tribunals. You note several instances where people were careful to draw a distinction between acts of genocide and genocide, or war crimes and crimes against humanity. Our listeners probably use these terms all interchangeably, and we probably do on this show as well. What's the difference and why does it matter?
Well, there's a difference that matters in the courtroom, in the tribunal courtroom, as to how you frame an indictment, what you charge someone with, what are the elements of crimes that you have to establish, if it's a war crime versus a crime against humanity, etc. But one of the main points of my book, and it's in the final chapter of the book, is that we need to consolidate our terminology into one term, atrocity crimes, so that people can speak of atrocity crimes, journalists can do so, even policymakers and diplomats. So that we react quickly enough to these situations and we don't get bogged down in trying to distinguish a situation between genocide, which has a very specific criminal intent requirement, and other, you know, constraints to how you define that crime. We certainly discovered in Rwanda that getting bogged down in determining whether or not it's genocide actually inhibited our ability to react. So let's use the term atrocity crimes, which covers all of these crimes, get on with the business of reacting to them, and leave to the tribunals the precise criminal determination of which of these categories of crimes applies.
We can't end this interview without noting that the U.S. has not joined the International Criminal Court. How does that make you feel?
Well, very distressed at times because we put an enormous amount of effort into this in the 1990s. President Clinton on 6 occasions publicly stated that he wanted this court built by the end of the 20th century, and in fact it was. And we signed the Rome Statute on December 31st of 2000 at the very end of the Clinton administration.
You were the actual signatory,
yes,
right?
Yes, I was delegated by the president to come up to a very snowy New York that day, and I trudged in my boots to the UN from Penn Station to get there to do it on time. But I think now with 120 countries as members of the court, all of our allies with the exception of Turkey and Israel are part of the court, that it's time for us to understand the benefits of being a part of this court, not be so intimidated by it, and revise our federal criminal code and military justice code so that we know how to prosecute these crimes and thus insulate us actually from the jurisdiction of the court.
And you conclude the chapter about the signing by saying that the Bush administration effectively put an end to the U.S.'s involvement in the ICC. And your quote is, the era of American leadership in the arena of international justice had passed. Is it still past?
Yes, but I think there's a good comeback in the Obama administration. The administration has been very cooperative with the ICC, undertaken many activities that assist the International Criminal Court in its work. Just in October, 100 military trainers from the United States were sent to Uganda to assist the Ugandan military to track, detain, arrest, and send to The Hague the four indicted fugitives of the Lord's Resistance Army who continue to wreak havoc there and who need to stand before the Court of Justice. Those are the types of things the United States can do to truly help the ICC, as well as be very active in the UN Security Council in referring matters to the ICC.
Is it just up to President Obama, or would Congress need to approve joining?
Yes, the Senate would have to approve ratification of the Rome Statute of the ICC. And, of course, I sincerely hope that at some point we'll have the kind of political will within the U.S. Senate to take this up.
So at very best, it's been a low priority for the administration. He did have a Democratic Senate for a couple of years.
Yes, but, you know, he also has many other treaties that I think are prioritized for ratification over the Rome Statute, the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, the Child Rights Convention, the Law of the Sea Convention. And given the way Washington is these days, I think the listeners will understand how difficult it is to get any high-profile treaty actually ratified in the U.S. Senate.
The Bush position, as I understand it, was always that the United States would be singled out at the ICC because as the dominant superpower and for whatever petty politics of, you know, dictators and whoever in other countries, President Bush himself, when he travels abroad, Dick Cheney, people have talked about, maybe would be arrested for war crimes, and it would be political rather than a matter of justice. And the U.S. was singularly vulnerable to that kind of thing. We have 30 seconds left.
I think we need to end the days of insecurity and intimidation. We need to have faith in our belief in the rule of law. We need to reassert our leadership in the rule of law, have confidence in the legality of our military operations, and finally, make sure that our own domestic law is enforced, that it's modernized, and that, frankly, if political and military leaders violate these crimes, if they commit genocide, if they're involved in crimes against humanity, quite frankly, under our system, they're supposed to stand trial.
U.S. Ambassador at Large for War Crimes in the Clinton Administration, David Sheffer. His new memoir is titled All the Missing Souls, A Personal History of the War Crimes Tribunals. And if you want to meet him, he'll be in a discussion and book signing at the Cardozo Law School this evening at 6 o'clock. Cardozo Law School at 6 o'clock. RSVP via our website, wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Ambassador, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.